I'm Bob Franklin. Thanks very much for joining me. This is Like It Is. Today, Kim Davis of Kim & Company, located in Montgomery, Alabama, takes us to Anchorage, Alaska, to talk with one of the owners of a pretty cool restaurant that landed on a national food network.
There's a restaurant in Anchorage, Alaska, where everybody knows his name, Derek Green. He's the owner, the chef, the greeter, the man behind Waffles and Whatnot. During a recent visit to Anchorage, Alaska, I got a chance to go to Waffles and Whatnot to meet Derek himself and learn his incredible story. And today, we're talking with Derek Green one-on-one. Derek, welcome, and good morning, or good afternoon here, and good morning there in Alaska.
Thank you. And good morning or good afternoon back to you.
You know, it really was a grand experience this past summer meeting you and dining at Waffles and Whatnot. So for those who are not familiar with this wonderful restaurant, a wonderful guy, tell us who you are and tell us the incredible story of how Waffles and Whatnot began.
Who I am is simple. I'm just a man on a journey of becoming and discovery. And I have a purpose, I feel, on this earth to use the talent, skills, and gifts that I've been given to help heal others, to give back. And food is one of those mediums by which I do it. Waffles and Whatnot is a socially conscious establishment that I created in 2016 to further this journey that I'm on of being able to give back. We take Southern style cuisines and infuse them with people's daily doses of certain superfoods or spices that helps to heal the human bodies. Things like turmeric and garlic and Ceylon cinnamon and many other things. Yeah, that's it. That's me in a nutshell.
But you know what? There was a story behind even that genesis. So tell us how it all began. Take us back.
So this all began with my wife, who was undergoing chemotherapy. And the third day was always the worst day for her, where she wouldn't be able to hold anything down. And I would watch her go through this like gut-wrenching bouts with nausea. I created a pancake that was compliant with bananas, rice, apples, and toast, the brat diet. Fast forward years later, my wife eventually, after fighting for 6 years, lost that battle to cancer. But my mom and my grandmother were both battling food-related illnesses at the same time. And so I took the recipe that I had created for my wife and I converted that to a waffle. Mm-hmm. Because you can hide a lot of things or infuse a lot of things into a waffle, enrich a waffle with a lot of ingredients. And in doing so, I was able to create something, not just a waffle. I also created a fried chicken batter for my mom, mm-hmm. such that if my mom ate one of my waffles and 3 strips of chicken, she would get her daily dose of protein, plus she would get an additional 6 of the medications and supplements that the doctors had her taking on any given day for the treatment of cancer and the treatment of AIDS as well. So everything that I do at Waffles and Whatnot is done in layers. There's always layers behind it. The tables are painted red in the restaurant to raise awareness for HIV and AIDS. The franchise system that I created was actually done because my father had been in prison since I was about 5 years old. And after his last release in 2013, I noticed him struggling to adapt to society, to readjust to a world that he didn't know when he reentered it. Prior to his release, prior to him going in, cell phones didn't exist, social media didn't exist, WhatsApp, Facebook groups, and these things didn't exist. So he came out to a world that was completely foreign to him and eventually decided to go back in by robbing an IHOP of their coins. And then, unfortunately, that was his third strike in the state of Florida. So he will likely die incarcerated, but he's always run prison kitchens. Mm-hmm. And so I took this model that I had been perfecting and I turned it into a franchise system such that if he were to ever get out again, I'd be able to put him in a system that he's familiar with while we wrap resources around him. But as I did that, Kim, I noticed that there are so many other people out there that are in need of this service, that are in need of something, that someone to give them a chance, someone to believe in them again, someone to actually offer them the chance to redeem themselves, mm-hmm. and to not hold the sins of their past over their head for the rest of their days. And so, as I said before, there are layers to why everything exists in this company called Waffles and Whatnot.
So what's the next chapter for Waffles and Whatnots, Derek? You have, since I have met you and have known you and we've been communicating, you know, the dreams that you have are just grandiose. Share a little of that with us, please.
Well, grandiose problems require grandiose dreams and solutions.
Yeah.
So looking at right now, the fact that, the numbers vary, but estimates show that 1 in 3 Black men will see the inside of a jail cell in their lifetime, and that 1 in 15 are currently incarcerated. It is a $186 billion industry that will not go away. It's too big to fail now. There's so many communities that depend on the policies created under mass incarceration. With that reality in mind, we have to offer an alternative, a solution, so that people can reduce the recidivism rate. For me, that means building the largest Black-owned franchise in American history. And in doing so, creating a system that's vertically integrated, mm-hmm. whereby we can provide the maximum number of jobs and chances at redemption to people. Additionally, working with organizations like the National Restaurant Association and the American Correctional Association, or the National Association for Blacks in Criminal Justice, and creating an environment where it's a new prison to prosperity pipeline, where after people are returning, or citizens are returning to society, we're able to not just teach them how to operate within a restaurant or a food space, but to eventually own it as entrepreneurs.
Sure.
Because in my opinion, entrepreneurship is one of the surest ways out of the recidivism trap.
And I'm sure it's being well received as you're talking to others who want to know more about how can we invite you into our areas in the community. I know recently you just went to Washington, D.C., and was that a part of the next step, next mission, or perhaps even a brand new purpose?
Absolutely. Everything's connected. So going to Washington, D.C. and meeting with some of the powerful organizations like the National Restaurant Association, which is based in D.C., or many of the other organizations that I've met with, is to deal with prison reentry programs and to deal with, you know, at-risk youth, and to learn the ins and outs of the nonprofit world, which I've never had experience in. I've mm-hmm. only been a for-profit entity since I started, but there's access to funding via so many programs out there that desire to have an impact on prison reentry, that desire to lower recidivism. So if I can bring my dream in alignment with theirs, essentially supporting the fulfillment of their dream through my missions, then there's capital available at higher levels to be able to make more things happen.
Well, certainly keep us posted on some of those next steps, Derek. No doubt about that. But let's go back to the restaurant. Let's go back to the food. Let's go back to the people who come and enjoy and sit and eat. One person whose name everybody will be familiar with is Guy Fieri. Tell us about the day that you got that call to be on his show and share that memory with us. What was that experience like?
Absolutely amazing. I thought that it was a spam call. But someone reached out. They wanted to interview me. We set up the interview. And I truly thought it was spam because they didn't identify themselves as belonging to any specific network or anything like this or any particular show. But we talked for about 30 minutes where they truly wanted to see how my kitchen operates. Was I the one in charge of it? Or was I a scammer, basically? Mm-hmm. At the conclusion of the conversation, the lady introduced herself and told me who she was exactly within the food network. Mm-hmm. And she asked me, had I ever heard of Diners, Drive-Ins, and Dives? And it's like, what? who in the culinary world has not heard of Diners, Drive-Ins?
Sure, of course. Mm-hmm.
And so she let me know that I was on a short suspense. We had about 13 days to get everything prepared because he was coming up to Alaska, and we made it happen. So I had to shut down the restaurant, do all of the prep work that they require in order for him to come in and make it as smooth a process as possible for him. And this is where he really earned my respect. It wasn't the food shows necessarily. It was watching his production team and the people around him and the way that they admire him and talk about him. Mm-hmm. For me, having spent 21 years in the military, Guy Fieri's production team is the most efficient system, the most efficient group of people that I've seen when it comes to organization and structure. And it was a beautiful thing to participate in that. And I'm thankful and just blessed for it, Kim. And then he flew me down. I don't know if I ever told you, but he flew me down to California to film Guy's Grocery Games. So providing another opportunity for me. Uh-huh. And that turned out to be the most fun I've ever had in the culinary world.
Yeah.
Going down there and just competing with these three other amazing chefs, watching the creativity, realizing that this show was not staged. You literally only get 30 minutes to shop, cook, plate, and serve your food. You think 30 minutes is a long time, but man, it flies.
I can only imagine. It's like 30 minutes. It feels like three. What did you serve? What did you cook?
So I served two dishes. One of them was a macaroni and cheese. That was a guilty pleasure dish. It was supposed to be, what is your guiltiest pleasure? And I was with some vegan chefs. So I decided to do something that absolutely wasn't vegan. And I served this macaroni and cheese, but the cheese aisle was blocked off from us, so we couldn't use real cheese. And I instead used Cheez-Its.
What? Really?
Yes.
Okay.
I used Cheez-Its as the cheese base to make a sauce. And just by luck, I ran past and saw that they had some chicken cutlets already done. And so I served those as well. It was just some off-the-shelf, very quick stuff. Mm-hmm. And another thing that I served were waffles. I made waffles, but I was under so much stress. I'll be honest with you and your audience, Kim, that I literally forgot how to make waffles. I was standing in the aisle talking to myself, trying to remember a waffle recipe.
Okay, well, tell us what your waffle recipe is. No stress. Tell us what your waffle recipe is.
Let's see. You take a little bit of flour, some sugar, baking soda, add in some love, passion, lots of tears, and hope. The biggest thing in there is hope and faith. Those are actual ingredients that people may want to dismiss. But, you know, Simon Sinek has that thing about starting with your why. And sure. I have lost my mom, wife, and grandmother to food-related illnesses. And I'm looking at now, as a country, the health, by and large, especially for poorer communities, not just Black communities, but Black, Brown, BIPOC, white communities, poor communities throughout this country, where many of the diseases and the comorbidities and things COVID exposed can be traced back to food.
Yes. It is what
we're eating. And a lot of it has to do with profit via the industrial food complex's desire to maximize profit and maximize productivity and efficiencies. Well, in the course of doing that, I feel that there has been a straying away from the idea of, or the concept of, let's figure out what's best for the human body, what's best for our souls, what's best for our minds. And so while I can talk about the communities and the disproportionate number of diseases like heart disease and dementia, Alzheimer's, diabetes, type 1 and 2, more and cancers, more importantly, is to talk about, I feel, the fact that food is medicine. We can heal the human body. And if we don't do something right now, it'll be our kids and our grandkids that are suffering diseases at a faster rate than even we are, because those chemicals will keep being poured into the processes of our food production.
You know, I'm so glad that you said that. As I get older, it's important to me to be a lot more cognizant of my diet, what I eat to protect this temple, to work out and to walk and enjoy foods that I know are healing foods for me. One of my favorite foods, and you'll like this because I'm sure you serve it as a topping on your waffles and your pancakes, are blueberries. Mm-hmm. And I know you use a lot of fresh ingredients for all of what you cook in your restaurant. And let me just say, the day that we walked inside the restaurant and you greeted us, everybody felt so welcomed. It was like coming home to a new place in Anchorage, Alaska. And then the thing that you said to us that we really, really enjoyed was, wait a minute, you don't order. We'll order for you. And if you don't like what we serve you, then you come to the table or come to the counter and we will order. And then you can order what you want. That indeed was a fresh experience for us. And you treated us so warmly. We felt like the best kings and queens ever who entered Waffles and Whatnot, Derek. So I don't know if I've said thank you. So let me say thank you now. Any final comments that you want to share? Because it was truly a wonderful experience. And since you and I have gotten to know each other, it has been a great friendship and an ongoing wonderful experience. Final thoughts.
I'll let you in on a couple secrets about why you don't get to pick what you eat on your first visit.
Okay.
One, oftentimes the chefs that we have in the kitchen, sometimes we feature guest chefs, they're cooking up something that's far superior than anything we have on the menu. Now, with that being said, everything that's on that menu, if it doesn't get consistent five-star reviews, we take it off the menu. So when I'm saying that there's a chef in the kitchen that probably has something that tastes better than anything I have on the menu today, there's credence behind that. And so we want people to experience that. We also want them to try something out of the box. Chicken and waffles is something that's common in this country, but most people serve it the same way. Not many people might or would expect to receive a garlic parmesan buttermilk biscuit waffle that has spinach chicken Alfredo on the side of it. That's also chicken and waffles. And so you want to try something different. It's also a trust exercise. You see, in order to retrain the human psyche and to retrain our stomachs, a level of trust has to be established between me and the general public. They have to know that I'm going to treat them right. Because as I'm doing things like infusing garlic, turmeric, the berries that you mentioned, the olive oil, your MCT oil, the leafy greens, the avocados, the all these various things that have great benefits for the body, that maybe some people, you know, I'm sure you've heard people that say, oh, no, I don't like garlic. I don't like onions. Mm-hmm. I don't like this. Mm-hmm. I don't like that. Mm-hmm. So maybe it's just that they had it in a way that it wasn't prepared in a way that was digestible or a way that they could enjoy it. So sure. Give us a shot. And it's no risk, because if you take two bites and you don't love it, you can pick anything off the menu and we'll cook that up for you. When it comes to final thoughts, it is this, that thing about not being able to pick what you eat has layers to it. Everything in Waffles and Whatnot, just like everything in my life and in your life, has layers to it. If we seek to understand each other, then I personally believe that we play a part in raising the vibration of and raising the energy of the world. Food is my medium, media is your medium, and being able to capture people's story. And when I look at the aging population, you know, you have an impact on my life as well, because I see that there's a demographic that could also very much use some of the knowledge that I have. So I thank you for giving me a chance. I thank you for giving me a platform. And I thank you for just being a supportive friend on this journey that I'm on. So I appreciate you.
Well, I appreciate you too, more than you'll ever know. Thank you, Derek, for talking one-on-one with Kim. And we'll talk again. Thank you so much.
Thank you. Be blessed.
All Like It Is segment featured the restaurant Waffles and Whatnot, located in Anchorage, Alaska. Kim Davis reported. Kim represents Kim and Company, located in Montgomery, Alabama. Our next segment explores autism.
I'm Makua Holt. Today on Like It Is, what are some of the early signs of autism in children? Janice Warren, parent, art educator, and advocate, is here to tell us more.
They're off to themselves, they're happy, and they don't want to be bothered. Those are some of the signs that a parent can look for. A red flag will probably go up. Those signs were always present for me. And again, I just wasn't aware. I just thought it was a stage. And I didn't know a lot about autism. You want to go to your pediatrician, you get a second opinion or a thought of where to go forward.
According to the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention, autism is one of the fastest growing developmental disorders.
Thank you for joining us, Janice.
Hi, thank you for having me, Akua. Glad to be here.
The CDC says in 2023, 1 in 36 children
in the U.S. were estimated to have autism,
an increase from 1 in 44 children. Although exact cause of autism is still unknown, there's evidence to suggest that genetics may play a role since autism is less prevalent in females. Autism was always thought to be passed down from the mother. However, research suggests that autism genes are usually inherited from the father. The study also reported that art therapy may reduce social communicative issues and restrictive and repetitive behavior patterns. They found that the typical art therapy elements, sensory experiences with sight and touch, may improve behavior, flexibility, and attention abilities of children with ASD. This study was done in September 2023. As a parent of a child with autism, what can you share to help us understand what is autism and how it shows up in children? Were you aware of autism in the early stages of your child's development?
Because my previous teaching experience was in the early childhood setting. I worked with numerous daycares and early childhood centers throughout the city of Houston and surrounding areas for many years, learning about developmentally appropriate activities and how to help children meet their milestones, you know, making sure that not only in my daughters, but children that I worked with, I was always collecting data because we would always send home what we call daily reports. So I was just making sure that the students were right on task. My youngest daughter, who is now 16, it did come as a surprise because I was not aware of autism. There was not a lot of knowledge back then for me to truly understand what it was. I saw a lot of symptoms. I saw a lot of things that were not lining up. I noticed a lot of repetitive behaviors, but I was not aware of autism. It was not something that was introduced in the early childhood setting or in the classrooms that I frequent on a daily basis.
For parents who may be unfamiliar with autism, what are some of the patterns they may see in their children to identify early on that, yes, I should have my child screened for autism?
There are a lot of what we call just signs, such as hidden signs, repetitive behaviors. That's one thing that I would notice with my daughter. She would do a lot of repetition of, she would take little objects that she would find on the floor or in her room. She would line them up into straight lines, and they would be odd type of little gadgets. She didn't play with what we call traditional toys like blocks and puzzles and even Barbie dolls. She would find little screws or little pins or little paper clips and just play with those and gravitate to those and line them up. So that's one of the autism signs that you may want to look for. Again, repetitive behaviors, flapping of hands, twirling hands. A lot of the kids will lose eye contact when you're talking to them. Their eyes tend to wander off into space. They have a difficult time looking at you directly in your eyes. Repetitive movements, along with, I think I mentioned that, also echolalia. If they're not verbal, then echolalia, they would repeat some of the things that you say. Do you want a drink? Do you want a drink? Would you like a cookie? Would you like a cookie? So that repetitive behavior is present immediately. Those are just some of the signs that I would notice when she was very young. I'm an art educator as well as an art facilitator, and I consider myself to be also an advocate. I don't consider myself to be an art therapist, but what I do with my students is very therapeutic. I introduce them to techniques where they can slowly engage into discovering new materials. So it's very tactile. A lot of the materials are what I call adaptive materials, with some students who have a difficulty with gripping a paintbrush or gripping a pencil, then they have to use different materials, and they may have tape that can be wrapped around a paintbrush because of the fact it helps them to grip. They may not be comfortable with the smoothness of the brush. There's a lot of one-on-one that I do with my students. So everything is taken in a very slow process. Even when I am giving instructions, I give a lot of visual clues. For example, one, we're going to take out the paint. Two, I have an image for them to look at so that they will know what to expect, step one, step two, and step three. My work is fun and engaging so that they know that there aren't any wrongs to it. They're allowed to stand. And we use different parts of our body. Sometimes we'll use in our hands, we can paint with our feet, they use their fingers, and we use a lot of what we call non-traditional objects. For example, straws, cotton balls, we just use a little bit of everyday objects so that they can kind of connect with product and with the materials.
And the study also shows art experience or expression for the children can help them express their thoughts, emotions, and experiences in a visual and tangible way. This can also help them communicate their feelings and ideas more effectively when verbal communication can be challenging. How can parents incorporate some of these activities into their daily lives?
You have to have passion, and you have to be willing to break away from the traditional art forms. I often say that growing up, most students are introduced to one way of making art. That's painting, that's drawing a tree with the green bushes, the green leaves, and maybe some apples, but helping students to think abstractly and present to them several examples of a tree, several examples of whatever object that it is that you want to introduce them to. And then also just have fun. I like to say, go on a treasure hunt around your house and look for materials that are easily accessible. Even some of the objects that they gravitate to that they can use as materials to go into their works or to be used to be incorporated to dip in the paint or to use for smearing and for smudging. Be willing to explore, be willing to step outside of the box. This helps your child improve in so many different ways. It gives them a sense of belonging. It also helps them to express themselves in a very non-traditional way.
Children on the autistic spectrum can show a sense of creativity and imagination. There are some examples of children being great at art. How can you encourage children to participate who may not be interested in exploring these methodologies that you're talking about?
I believe that it's always about process and never the product. When I introduce a lesson to my students, I quickly show them just an example of what it is that we are attempting to create, but I don't hold that as the end product. I let them know that we're going to do abstract art, and we talk about abstract art. I present several examples of abstract art, and then I supply them with the materials that are necessary for them to create. You introduce it to them and let them know that to use your creative imagination.
We continue our discussion on autism in 7 days. I'm Bob Franklin. I'll be back next week with 30 more minutes of good conversation on another edition of Like It Is.
Native Voice One, the Native American Radio Network.